Hello, everybody. I am Bill Buckmaster. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show on this Wednesday, September the 5th, 2012, home of the Buckmaster Show, AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. We're live streaming the show on my website, buckmastershow.com, and at the station's website, kvoi.com. And you can hear our programs anytime, anywhere by visiting four websites, buckmastershow.com, tucsonsentinel.com, tucsoncitizen.com, and our latest edition, gvnews.com. That's the website for the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. They have a link now to the Buckmaster Show on their homepage. We're live during the noon hour each weekday. We'll get things rolling today. We have another jam-packed show for you. Pima County Supervisor Richard Elias joins me in studio. 20 minutes past the hour, we talk politics with District 2 Arizona legislative candidate Democrat Andrea D'Alessandro, who is involved in a three-way race for two seats in the 2013 legislature. 30 minutes past the hour, University of Arizona Distinguished Professor Albrecht Clausen joins us in studio to talk about his new book on the early days of our region. 45 minutes past the hour, Dr. Mark Sykes, head of the University of Arizona-based Planetary Science Institute, talks about the 50th anniversary next week of an important milestone in this country's space program. It was President Kennedy who made that that speech at Rice University 50 years ago, challenging America to put a human being on the moon. So we'll talk about where have we come since that 50-year anniversary and where are we going with Dr. Sykes. 790-2040, the Buckmaster Show live line. You are always welcome, Buckmaster Show listeners, to join in. If you have a question, you can also use Facebook. Our growing number of friends, thank you, are using Facebook. If you'd like to add a question, we will monitor that and we'll get it on the air. Richard Elias joining us now. Another jam-packed show, Supervisor Elias.
Well, just glad to be here with you one more time, Bill. And gosh, you mentioned the space program and President Kennedy and all of that. It reminds me when I was a kid and I had those plastic models of the Mercury and Gemini and then eventually Apollo spaceships. It meant a lot to all of us.
Actually, I've got a couple of segues with guests today. Not only that, but Dr. Clausen being with us and your family, the Eliases, go back to Presidio days.
Yeah.
Your great-great, I don't know how many greats, grandfather was one of the soldiers at the Presidio, right?
My very first relative in Tucson was named Cornelio Elias. And he was one of the first soldiers sent to staff the Presidio in September of 1776.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what Dr. Clausen says because the book he has edited is that pretty much that time period, a little before that time period. But it's kind of post-Father Kino days because we all have heard of Father Kino, but after Father Kino, you know, we don't hear so much. So he's going to shed some light on that. Let's talk a little bit about yesterday, the supervisors canceling 12 uncontested school board elections. This is going to save about $250,000.
Yes, that's correct. And not only did we cancel some school board elections, but we also canceled some domestic water district elections, as well as another group of elections related to, we said school board, water district, and fire districts. That was the third group. Amazing, actually. Strange situation, I think. Those are volunteer boards that typically handle an awful lot of money and really water, fire, public safety, and our children's education. Really important issues to all of us. It's amazing that so many races were uncontested.
And why do you think that is?
Well, you know, there's kind of a negative climate out there in campaigning right now, and I think that's turned some people off from putting that much effort into a position that you don't receive any financial remuneration for, and it makes it difficult to sacrifice your family time to do that. But we were able to save some money for the taxpayers, about $250,000. It's a big, huge election. It also cuts down some of the ballot fatigue for voters as they go through and vote for people because it's a huge ballot in November.
Of course, this is an election year, and the Pima County Supervisors, this is the first time in, I think, about 20 years that all the incumbents are facing opposition. Of course, there is that one open seat. That's District 1 of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. As Ann Day is stepping aside and retiring, we have Allie Miller and Nancy Young-Wright going at it in that that race. And we'll be having the two of them, Richard, on the Buckmaster Show. And I want to give folks the date, if you would not mind. If
sure.
I look that up real quickly, it is Wednesday, September the 19th. We'll have Allie Miller and Nancy Young-Wright together with us for a half an hour on the 12:30 portion of the program. You have a election coming up, a Republican, Mr. Gonzalez, Fernando Gonzalez, running against you. This is the first time you've had an opponent. Have you had an opponent before?
Yes, I had an opponent in 2002.
Okay.
In the primary election.
All right. Well, what is your campaign? What's your platform?
Well, really, I think it's important that we maintain the level of financial sustainability that Pima County has created there for the residents of Pima County. We've been bucking a national trend where local and countywide governments, statewide governments have been going broke. Pima County has steadily made tough decisions that have been painful but have created a financially stable organization for all the governments in the region to depend on. We've lost $300 million from our annual budget, but we've done a good job at making sure those folks found jobs in the private sector, and we also have worked hard to make sure we haven't had layoffs or furloughs for our employees. We've managed to maintain the tax level at or below what it's been in the past, and I'm proud of that work. We've created 12,000 jobs through bond elections. I'm very proud of that work as well. We've helped to bring Major League Soccer to Tucson to replace Major League Baseball, and we've done a great job of it. This spring, we're going to have 9 MLS teams here in Tucson, and we're really looking forward to that big splash, some great games at Keno Stadium, accumulating in the Desert Diamond Cup, where this year we're likely going to have 6 teams involved in the Cup. So I'm real proud of that work. That's a lot of hotel nights. That's a lot of restaurant meals. That's a lot of new money coming into our community that never would have been there.
Pima County Supervisor Richard Elias is with us on the Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. Mining is going to be an issue. It is an issue in this supervisorial race. Is this Pima County Board of Supervisor anti-mining?
No, I don't think we are at all, and I think we've just shown it by working with the Oracle Ridge Mine to approve them getting started their work again on the backside of Mount Lemmon. We've worked with the mines down south of town to help protect the people's health, as well as work with them cooperatively on changes they needed to make to find the way to profitability again. And I think we've shown repeatedly that we support mining in the region, their history, and they're part of the economy. But I think that, the proposal for Rosemont and the Santa Rita Mountains from those folks up there in Canada is just the wrong mine at the wrong place.
So it's not just – you're not painting all mining with a broad brush here.
No, I think that would be irresponsible and wrong to do.
What about this charge that is made to the current board that you are mentioning jobs, but that keeps coming up as far as this board is anti-business?
I think that's absolutely wrong. I think we've worked hard to streamline some of the processes that we've had. When the housing bubble was still going, there were no complaints about our development services processes, and I think we've done a good job with that. In the meantime, we've created a lot of jobs with the bond money that voters approved generously in 2004 and 2006. I think we've also worked very hard to make sure that the vendors and other folks that we have direct business ties with have done well and become good partners of us all. It's interesting that the people who criticize us for being anti-business are the same folks who say government has nothing to do with business and doesn't create jobs. So it's kind of ironic that they have it one way and then they have it the other. And actually, the big lie is that we're anti-business. The truth is we're all about our region growing responsibly.
Richard Elias with us, Pima County Supervisor. He is running for re-election as a Democrat in District 5. What about the fact that the board gets criticized, that, and it is a campaign issue, about the roads?
Well, you know, we have spent about $20 million in the last 5 months on our roads. We're looking at finding some ways to leverage those dollars to make them go even further so that we can get our roads back up into decent shape. Probably by the end of this fiscal year, we'll probably find ourselves looking at a lot better kind of situation. And then we need to continue working on the legislature to elect people who are actually going to make sure we get the road money that we're supposed to get instead of having it siphoned off to Maricopa County's latest pet project.
Will there be a bond election? When will the next bond election be?
I think we're probably looking at some time 2014, 2013. I think it's that far off.
Was there some legislation that said you could not do them now in an odd year, that it had to be an even year? Did something change in that regard?
There was a bill that was floated in that regard, but I believe it did not pass, if I'm not mistaken. But they still need to be held in November during a general election.
But it's been a while since we've had a bond election.
Yes, we have not had one since 2006.
And what would be at the top of the list of the issues that need to be dealt with?
I think roads and parks and recreation.
And as far as Raytheon, wasn't there some talk about trying to help them out?
There has been some talk about that. That's part of that roads package that I mentioned. That's really about protecting a number of businesses that are out there in the county, in the periphery of our community. So that's why I think that becomes a roads package that's also an economic development package. But I think it's unreasonable to not recognize that parks and recreation is probably the most pressing need that we have. For a lot of different reasons, not the least of which is ultimately the diabetes epidemic that folks are facing and childhood obesity. We need to make sure that we have proper recreation facilities for people. Just look at how folks have reacted to the loop and its completion around our community for biking
people
enthusiasts.
Love that new
they
loop.
Love it.
They really do.
And they should.
Yeah,
I think we can make things better here in Pima County.
Okay, Richard Elias, thank you for being with us. Have yourself a great day.
Inside Pyramid Federal Credit Union, customer service is what we do. Outside, community service is who we are. Inside, we help generations achieve their financial goals. Outside, we help those in need. We reach out to our members. We reach out to our community. Because Pyramid Federal Credit Union is passionate about one thing: people. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways. Projects underway include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson, Cold Road Extension to Sabino Canyon Road, and Speedway from Camino Seco to Houghton. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you. Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our neighbors realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and build a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's PCC students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a smart, thriving Tucson and Pima County. Our region has not been immune to the unprecedented economic challenges of the past few years. During this time, PCC has prided itself on offering crucial programs and services at an extremely affordable price. We remain one of Arizona's best education bargains. With your ongoing support, we look forward to embarking on new directions and building new community connections that ensure the people of Pima County will prosper today and in the future. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
My name is Mark Layton, and I'm the IT guy over at O'Neill Printing. In order to serve my Tucson clients, I've got to be able to quickly receive files up to 10 gigs in size. That's why we made the switch to Cox Business. We used to have an internet connection that could barely handle more than 2 file uploads at a time. With Cox Business, our connection is 10 times faster, and our bill is 40% less. Now that's what I call a no-brainer.
Get to know the business side of Cox at coxbusinessaz.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster, 1221 now on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. This portion of the Buckmaster Show presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. The folks at Splendido want to talk about what they have to offer. They're willing to buy you a free breakfast at the Hilton Tucson East on Thursday, September the 20th at 9:30. RSVP and say you heard about it right here on the Buckmaster Show, 762-4090, 762-4090, SplendidoTucson.com. This afternoon, we are resuming our candidate interview series, actually now for the general election, featuring Tucson area candidates who are on the ballot for the upcoming election. Today, we spotlight Arizona Legislative District 2, which includes parts of Pima and Santa Cruz counties. There are three candidates battling for 2 seats in the Arizona legislature. Democrats Andrea D'Alessandro and Rosanna Gabaldon are facing Republican Christopher Ackerley. Ms. D'Alessandro, who is a retired CPA and teacher, joins us now on the Buckmaster Show. Good to see you, Andrea.
Good to see you, Bill.
Tell me a little bit about this particular district. Does it favor the Democrats or what?
Yes. While I ran in Legislative District 30, which had a 13% Republican advantage, the new Legislative District 2 has a 15% Democratic advantage, and it includes all of Santa Cruz County.
So that's an advantage for you, so you must be feeling pretty good about that.
I am, but Bill, it comes with a big responsibility because we have 34% of the children in the district live in poverty, and in Santa Cruz County there's a 18.1% unemployment rate.
What are your issues that you're campaigning on, Andrea?
Well, Bill, it was education that got me into this race. In fact, it was actually the English language learner suit that involved Nogales, the Flores suit. And it's ironic that now Nogales, I will be representing Nogales come January. So naturally, jobs is number one, but we can't have job growth, economic development without support of higher education and K-12 education.
I've been looking through some of the publicity about some of the forums that you have been having, and you've been really out there meeting a lot of people. And it doesn't seem like there is much of a difference as far as the issues that the three candidates are. Mm-hmm. What do you see? Where's the defining issue here?
Well, with me, I think I live in Legislative District 2 and Congressional District 2, and I've had basically two careers in my life. One is an educator. I've taught everything from seventh grade math to seniors in college, and I also am a business person. I was a CPA, and I had my own tax practice for a long time. So I feel that what makes us different is my unique professional prepared, experience.
Are you in favor of the dedicated 1 cent sales tax, the measure that will be for education on the ballot in November?
Although sales tax is my least favorite tax, because when the economy goes bad, people stop spending. I do support it, and not only for the education part, but for the stopping the sweeping of the HERF funds and the road and job component of it too.
The Rosemont Mine area is, of course, very important to the people in your district, legislative district. Do you think that what's your position on the mine?
Well, I support the miners and the steel workers in the existing mines, but I'm opposed to the Rosemont mine mainly because of water issues, and there are a host of other issues. As I said, this district includes Santa Cruz County. It virtually will isolate the people in Sonoyta and Elgin and Patagonia. So
Santa Cruz County has, as I recall, one of the highest unemployment rates in the state. Mm-hmm. Yuma County has traditionally had the highest, but I think Santa Cruz County has a high mm-hmm. unemployment rate, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It's over 18%.
Wow.
And Bill, I'm not really the cheerleader type, but with apologies to my cheerleading friends, I think that the current politicians have really done a disservice to all of Southern Arizona by making it seem like it's a war zone, a danger zone, a warning zone. And I've met with some Republican legislators already and said, when you're down, come down to Pima County, come down to Santa Cruz County. Sure, there are dangers out there, but like anywhere else, there are dangers. I mean, Green Valley and Sahuarita, they're quiet little places. Tonight, I'll be at the Customs and Border Protection right at the wall on the line in Nogales I'm in the Citizens Academy. And every place I look, there's law enforcement, and I don't feel threatened. I don't feel unsafe there.
Andrea D'Alessandro is with us. She's a Democrat. She's one of three candidates seeking 2 seats in the newly formed Arizona Legislative District 2. There are a lot of retired people, elderly people, veterans in your district.
Yes, and I happen to be one of those senior citizens, but I still have a lot of energy, and I'm looking forward. Pima Council on Aging is having some candidate forums coming up soon, and I'm looking forward to speaking with them.
How do you feel about balancing the budget, and should we have this a rainy day fund?
Oh, well, first of all, I think that any extra money we have now should go to restore the cuts made to public education and to health care. But in the long run, I'm a big proponent of upping the rainy day fund to 15%, because since before Arizona was a state, we've always been a boom and bust economy. We need a bigger cushion for the next bad time that comes along.
As far as jobs, high-tech jobs, you'd like to see a diversified economy?
Yes, definitely. And, I have coming on to the one-year anniversary of my solar system, and I love those $7.65 bills I get from TEP. But also the bio—
Oh, your own particular home. You're
yes.
on the solar.
Yes, I do. Yes, yes, yeah. I also have a water harvesting system, and I'm very happy I made that decision. I think TEP is going to have to write me a small check out in a month or two. So,
so you have been paying a utility bill that is practically non-existent.
Exactly. And it just funds other people. And I'd like to see the solar expand more into Santa Cruz County. And I also am a big proponent for the biosciences.
Where can people get more about your campaign?
Well, my website is D'Alessandro, D'Alessandro, foraz.com. It's a long one.
And this, you have been in politics before.
Well, I've been an elected precinct committee person and a state committee person.
But bottom line, you would like people to know what about you and your campaign? I've got about 25 seconds.
Well, I think my life's experiences and my campaigning here has made me be the most prepared professional candidate in the race. And I hope that the voters will come out on November 6th or earlier, October 11th, for the early ballots to support me, because I plan on representing all the constituents.
Andrea D'Alessandro, our guest here, a Democrat running in LD2. Thank you very much and good luck to you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Bill.
Coming up now on 12:30 on the Midweek Buckmaster Show edition, we're going to talk history. That's coming up next on the Buckmaster Show. SRN News. I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. More weather problems today for President Obama. His flight to North Carolina for the Democratic convention was briefly delayed by a thunderstorm, and that was just hours after Democrats announced that tomorrow night's closing session of the convention, including the president's acceptance speech, will be moved indoors because of the threat of severe weather. Ann Romney is citing her battle against multiple sclerosis as evidence that she and her husband understand people's problems. She spoke today at a rally for women at a college in Ohio. Forecasters say Leslie has strengthened into the sixth hurricane of the Atlantic season, but right now it remains far from land. On Wall Street, the Dow is up about 14 points, the Nasdaq trading 5 points lower, and the S&P is down one. More details at srnnews.com.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchases, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soup, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Why should you fly out of TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. The early history of our region of Arizona and Sonora was profoundly influenced and determined by the Jesuit missionaries from Europe. After Padre Eusebio Kino's death in 1711, an increasing number of German-speaking Jesuits entered our region and soon dominated the entire missionary district. One of those missionaries, Swiss-born Philip Segesser, is the subject of a new book edited by Dr. Albrecht Clausen, University of Arizona Distinguished Professor and Undergraduate Advisor in the Department of German Studies. The name of Dr. Clausen's book is The Letters of the Swiss Jesuit Missionary Philip Segesser, an Eyewitness of the Settlement of 18th Century Sonora. Dr. Albrecht Clausen joins us now on the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Clausen, good to see you again.
Bill, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell me how this project evolved, and when did you first hear of this missionary Segesser?
It's actually a long history going back to the 1970s when the then director of the State Museum got interested because they have a huge collection and a library of all kind of relevant material. And he had secured photographs of all the letters, but he never could find anyone who could even transcribe those letters. He approached me in the late 90s and asked me whether I could do this job. I looked at the documents and I said, no, I cannot read this. It's just very, very difficult handwriting. And
did you have to use a magnifying glass to even?
Well, it was difficult. First of all, we had then later someone who did his dissertation. He came directly from Germany, and he transcribed then all the letters into the computer, which then later made it possible for us to have at least a rough understanding of what those letters might have been.
So you did the actual translation then of these letters.
That's right.
But that was a huge undertaking, wasn't it?
Oh, it was the most difficult thing I've ever done in terms of translation. I do a lot of translation, let's say, from medieval German literature into English. But this 18th century hand, that was so difficult to read.
Well, I was intrigued by this project when you first brought it to my attention because in our region, when we think of the early history, European history of the region, we think of Father Kino, Padre Kino. But we don't hear about these people who came over from Europe after Kino.
That's right. Because this
kind of this in-between period when Kino died in 1711 until the founding of what is the current or the Presidio of Tucson, there's kind of that gap there. You don't hear about what
But Spain experienced simply a shortage of missionaries, and so they slowly opened up to the idea of allowing people from north of the Alps also to join the mission. And that was then the great time for Swiss, Austrian, primarily German, but also Czech or Bohemian, Croat, Polish, and other missionaries to come here.
And they came here. And tell me a little bit about these letters. What do they tell us that's important that you have discovered about our area and our history?
Maybe three major points could be really appealing for our readers. First of all, these are letters that really tell us of the daily life. What was going on? How did the interaction between the Jesuits and the Indians take place? The other really fascinating point is basically the end of the entire missionary activities. I would say Segesser is the best and the only real eyewitness who tells us in very short terms that the Apaches basically had won the war against the Jesuits.
He pretty much drove then the Jesuits out.
Very much so. He says in his last letters about 1762 that they're starving to death because no one dares to work on the fields anymore. Their animals have been killed or abducted, and the Indians are all over the place. They just don't know anymore what to do.
So that was pretty much a no man's land, at least for the Europeans in that area. You mentioned 1762 up until the founding of the actual Tucson Presidio in around 1776, I believe that is the date.
Yeah.
So this was a very dangerous period before that to be a European missionary.
Well, it was not quite a no man's land. That's a very difficult misnomer. After all, we have lots of different different Indian tribes, who many of whom were peacefully then settled. But then you had others, like the Seris and the Apaches, who lived more to the north and northeast, who did not accept the colonization and the attempts by the Spaniards to conquer them, basically. They didn't want to be settled. And so you have really a very conflictual situation, different cultures. But the Jesuits really managed to establish a network of missions all over the Southwest.
We're talking with Dr. Albrecht Clausen, University of Arizona. He is a UA Distinguished Professor and Undergraduate Advisor in the Department of German Studies, and he has undertaken this huge task of translating a lot of letters from the Swiss Jesuit missionary Philip Segesser. And it really is an eyewitness account of the settlement of the 18th century area known as Sonora. Some of your area that you got into, he spent some time. First of all, what was this missionary like, Mr. Segesser? What kind of a person was he?
He asked me to have – I translated all the letters. So I followed his early years as a young man. He came to this country when he was about 40. He was the oldest missionary ever to come here. And then I could trace his person development until his death. And he was a very devout, I mean, very passionately Catholic person. But he was also very devout to his parents and his family members. And so he writes these really passionate letters to his mother, to his brother, but also very, very pragmatic. He evolves. He faces a lot of very pragmatic needs. So many of these letters say something like, he needs tools, he needs seeds, he needs plants, he needs cloth, he needs vestments, he needs stuff for the church, he needs equipment for the kitchen. He asks his mother for recipes. How do I do Swiss cooking? How can I do this and that? And containers and whatever he asked in very pragmatic terms.
Tell me the time period that the letters cover.
Basically, for our interest, about 1732 to 1762. We have to realize that the communication between us and Europe took years. Normally, there's a 4 years, 5 years gap between what he writes or what he receives. It takes him 4 years to learn that his mother has died, for example.
Oh, my goodness. What about Father Kino or Padre Kino? Is he mentioned at all in the letters?
Basically not at all.
Is that surprising to you?
Yeah, I was looking for Kino all the time, but no, that history is really not that important. They are so burdened with work daily, and he writes his letters in such a haste. He constantly says, the messenger is waiting on the horse. I have to finish. I have no time to correct. I have just to finish and writing the last lines, and off the letter goes. So no editing stage, and that made it extremely difficult for us even to translate. There are a lot of faults and complex sentence structures, fragmentary and so forth. But we try to make good sense out of it.
And you are a scholar of German studies, so I'm also fascinated by this whole process that you went through. And the language itself, what were you dealing with some of the challenges between the modern language of German and what you were encountering
right.
in your translations?
Well, basically, I'm first of all a medievalist, so I really deal with early modern and medieval German language, literature, and culture. But I also teach and do research on these 18th century German missionaries because they're really interesting, particularly for anyone who lives here. I worked, of course, then with students, and I'm teaching actually the course right now. So for us, it's really a fascinating approach to rediscover the history of early Sonora.
Where is your book going to be available?
The book is available, or it was printed at ACMIS, that's Tempe, at the University, at the Arizona State University. It is simply available online. You can simply go
through Amazon?
Through Amazon or the bookstore here on campus. It is a scholarly book. I mean, it was printed really by a scholarly press for a scholarly audience, but it really wants to be available for the larger audience, anyone who is interested in the daily history of our history, which is surprisingly very much determined by these early missionaries, German-speaking missionaries.
You say that Philip Segesser came over here when he was 40 years old. What was his life? Had he been, did he join the Jesuits at an earlier age and served in Europe? And then what prompted him to come to to the New World?
I have read a lot of different accounts of Jesuits. So in general, it is always the same. They're very religious and they're Jesuits. So they're task is really to be missionaries.
One of very well educated people.
Highly educated. The Jesuits, until today, were some of the best educators, researchers, scholars. Think about the telescopes we have here and the Jesuits having a really big role in astronomy here in Arizona. That is a tradition which was actually started by Padre Kino. Siegesa was a teacher. He had gotten a very good education. And he was a teacher for many years until he was finally then called into the mission. That was his big dream. But I also discovered for the first time that he kind of had a mystical vision. He saw that the Virgin Mary nodded to him, and he knew he was destined
on the right path.
Yeah. On the right path.
What happened to him?
Well, you have to imagine, first of all, that all these people who came here took a huge challenge.
Yeah, big time.
It's a scary situation. Suddenly to live then all by yourself, weeks sometimes away, or 3-4 days on horseback away from the next European. You're surrounded by people who speak a completely different languages, have a completely different culture. You are alone.
So about a huge challenge.
That's incredibly difficult. I mean, most actually survived. Two or three got crazy and had to be sent back. But most struggled really hard. So these must have been people of greatest idealism.
Well, congratulations. I believe this book really is going to fill a gap in our history of the early region. Dr. Albrecht Classen, University of Arizona Distinguished Professor, Undergraduate Advisor in the Department of German Studies. He has edited this new book, The Letters of the Swiss Jesuit Missionary Philip Segesser, an Eyewitness of the Settlement of the 18th Century Sonora. Thank you very much, Professor. Good to see you, and congratulations on this project.
Thank you very much, Bill. It was my pleasure.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Even the highest efficiency washing machine won't make your laundry soft and bright if you have hard water. It's the same for your dishwasher with spotted glasses. So why not call the Culligan man? Culligan now has a high-efficiency water softener that virtually eliminates hard water problems throughout your entire home. Your laundry is brighter and softer, glasses and shower doors are spot-free, and soaps and detergents last longer. Plus, it saves you up to 46% in water, salt, and energy. So if you're looking for ways to end hard water problems and save money around the house, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener works wonders. In fact, it makes all of your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer. Thanks to Culligan, 100% satisfaction guarantee, your future, your home, and your laundry are guaranteed to be brighter. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable rugs looking like new with Arizona's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at East Fort Lowell and Dodge and say hello to owner-operator Amir Karimi. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. It's KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for authentic wood-fired Neapolitan pizzas, plus delicious pastas, panini, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is homemade using the finest and freshest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore has two locations open daily, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events.
Think credit unions don't have the locations or ATM networks that the big banks do? Think again. Pyramid Federal Credit Union offers fee-free ATM access at 120 ATMs in Southern Arizona and 60,000 ATMs throughout the country, plus free shared branch access at credit unions nationwide. And the convenience continues online with free bill pay and 24/7 online banking. So no matter where you are, you're just around the corner from Pyramid Federal Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Open your account today. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways, with more than a dozen projects underway, including the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has ongoing support of expanded SunTrans, SunVan service, SunExpress, and SunShuttle neighborhood service. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel around our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Coming up now on 1250 on the Buckmaster Show, we want to tell you, and proudly so, that this portion of the program brought to you by our friends in Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico. Love to talk up Silver City. It's really beautiful over there, 3.5 hours east of Tucson. A lot of our friends have been going over there to visit and come back just raving about the area. The summer rains have greened everything up along the Gila River, and it's absolutely beautiful. There's a Pick-A-Mania festival coming up. It's a free music festival in Silver City this weekend. That's September the 7th. So great places to stay, including Georgetown Cabins, Little Toad Creek, and Spirit Canyon Lodge. You can find out more at southwestnewmexico.org. You've been over to Silver City, haven't you, Dr. Mark Sykes?
I think I have.
Yeah, it's very pretty over there.
Yeah.
Along the Gila River, and a great area to visit. Dr. Mark Sykes joining us now. He is the Buckmaster Show contributor on space exploration, and there's a big anniversary coming up. Might not get that much publicity, but I think it's big, and because I'm old enough to remember when President John F. Kennedy made the declaration, the challenge, 50 years ago next week at Rice University in Houston, and he challenged Americans to let's get a space race going and let's put a human being on the moon.
Next week is 50th anniversary of President Kennedy's Rice University moon speech, where he kind of laid out the vision of you know, why we're doing this and why it's a particular American thing to do. The previous year, May 25th, 61, was when he spoke to Congress and said, I'm going to send a, you know, manned moon, we were going to send a man, bring back safely. And that was much more kind of a bellicose speech challenging the Soviet Union and all that. This was a more philosophical speech that was really quite inspiring for I also remember it for those of us that were around at the time.
You know what makes it so important, Mark? It was a crossroads speech, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It really put where this country plans to go,
mm-hmm.
and something that's been really lacking in recent times when it comes to space.
Well, at the time, he was talking about the moon.
Yes, right.
But there was this whole kind of subtext that was picked up by the popular culture, by the people you hear the expression, we're at the dawn of the space age, and people were convinced that this was just the beginning, that we were all going to have futures in space, ourselves, our children, our grandchildren, living, working, that it was inevitable that one day we'd wake up, look out the window, and it'd be the Jetsons.
And we'd all have a little spacecraft in our garage.
Our flying cars
commuting,
and stuff.
Commuting, yeah, with our flying car.
And of course, that's not why NASA and the Apollo program was being funded at the large levels of the time. Congress was funding that in order to beat the Soviets to the moon, in order to establish American dominance in technology and as an exemplar to the world. But the popular the people out there, of which we were among them, they weren't so concerned about beating the Soviets. You know, they were more excited about this opening of the future, this new frontier, this new American West that we were all going to push out into and exploit. But that was never the intention of the government. That was never so at the end of the, you know, once we landed on the moon and sent some more missions there, it was just a kind of a repeat and a repeat and a repeat, and with nothing obvious seeming to come afterwards. And of course, the Vietnam War was going on at the time, with the big budget pressures at that time.
And budget cutting really began in earnest.
Yeah, they really didn't. Congress kind of lost its impetus to continue to fund it at that level that it had been. And frankly, if Nixon hadn't been sold on this space shuttle idea, with the idea that it only cost $400 a pound to send something up into orbit, and that we could catch Soviet spacecraft with it, neither of which was quite true.
Yeah, but that started. Yeah,
but that kind of kept our
kept
toe
percolating,
in there.
Didn't it? Yeah. Dr. Mark Sykes is with us. He is the CEO and director of the Planetary Science Institute, which we like. We support PSI. That organization celebrating its 40th year as a Tucson-based nonprofit engaged in the exploration of the solar system. We like Dr. Sykes. He comes on our program at least once a month, and we talk about space. You have an op-ed piece, Giving Direction to American Human Exploration. This will be published in the next day or so. It's an op-ed piece in the trade industry publication Space News. What's the crux of this piece? And I'm going down to kind of your bottom line, looking at the long term.
Well, since the days of Apollo, there's been a desire to try to somehow recapture the energy of the 60s, the excitement. But the lesson that enthusiasts kind of took away, and that a lot of government people took away, that is that you need to have like a target to go to, you know, to throw a lot of money at, and you know, whether it's the moon, go back to the moon, go to Mars, go to an asteroid. But that was the wrong lesson, you know, because then what?
Yeah.
You get back to the moon, you plant another flag, and then have another coffee table book.
And it's just like you said earlier, that we met the goal of going to the moon, but then the momentum quickly fizzled out.
Yeah, because there was no vision beyond that. And so what I'm proposing is that we reconnect with what the popular vision was, which an answer, because we can answer the question of whether humans have a future beyond Earth. Is that even possible? We have the technology. We've got the industry base. We've got the science bench. The United States uniquely has the depth and breadth of the bench to answer this question. And there's some very basic questions to answer. One is to put a centrifuge up on the space station, like one that was canceled in 2005, to see, does Earth life thrive in a lunar or Martian gravity? I mean, because if you can't live there, you know, then you're not going anywhere. The other thing is that it doesn't cost $400 a pound to take stuff up to orbit. It's more like $20,000 a pound. and so we need to identify and tap resources from space, particularly near-Earth objects, which have orbits that come very close to the Earth and that are easy to get to and bring material back from. And so, that's the theory. You know, whether we can do that on an industrial scale is another question. But it's a question worth asking, and it's a question worth answering, because, frankly, if the answer is no and we don't have a future beyond the Earth, then that kind of raises the importance of keeping care of the one planet that we can live on. And it would give us some incentive to rethink, okay, what are we doing out there? I mean, there are things to do, but now we have the real context, and the ideas of colonization and such are impractical.
It just seems unbelievable that we haven't answered that big question. We, as you say, we need to determine if Earth life, including us, can thrive in lunar and or Martian gravities. Why in the world have we not answered that question?
Because it's open-ended. Because it's not – it doesn't fit the old mold of get from A to B and plant a flag and come back and smoke a cigarette.
But at some point, this will have to be addressed, right?
No, it doesn't have to be addressed.
Okay.
You know, but it's because it's a choice. I think that some nation sometime will do it. I think we are the only nation right now that can do it for the next maybe 20 years or so. And it depends on whether or not we want to take up the challenge. And the cool thing is that it doesn't really cost much. It's not like sending something back to the surface of the moon, which is a very expensive endeavor. Doing the centrifuge experiment is some fraction of $1 billion doing the Earth asteroid thing to find out if it's practical, if it's possible, is also a fraction of $1 billion. Whereas going back to the moon for another visit is tens of billions of dollars.
Quick plug for Planetary Science Institute, folks who might not know about you. You're right here in Tucson?
Yes. This is where our corporate headquarters is. We're celebrating our 40th anniversary this year. We just had a symposium in honor of our two founders, Bill Hartman and Don Davis, who came up with the modern theory of the origin of the moon, a Mars-sized object that smacked into the Earth early in the solar system that's still viable today. And we've got scientists in 18 states and about a half a dozen countries.
It's an economic driver as well. Dr. Sykes, good to see you. Mark, have a great day. Thanks.
Thanks, Bill.
Bottled water on the Buckmaster Show, provided by our friends at Culligan, offering the best drinking water and the largest variety of water treatment products and services available to your home or business. We keep the Culligan water right in front of us, don't we, Mark? You had a big drink of it right before you went on the air, didn't you? That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. John C. Scott this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Tomorrow, 6 to 8, it's Wake Up Tucson. I am Bill Buckmaster. That concludes our midweek edition on AM 1030 KVOI, the Voice. Have a great afternoon.
KVOI Cortero Tucson and 930 KAPR Douglas, The Voice, Good News Radio Network.